Rohingya, who have never been regarded as Myanmar citizens, and an end to the violence. A crackdown by Myanmar police and military authorities was described by the UN and the US as an example of ethnic cleansing. It prompted an increase of refugee crossings into Bangladesh, where the Rohingya live in squalid conditions. For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King.
Sports betting's begun in Delaware following a recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling that clears the way for it. And now, sports betting at New Jersey casinos and racetracks could get final legislative approval today. It's still unknown if the governor, Phil Murphy, will sign the bill right away. Monmouth Park Racetrack says it's ready to take bets as early as tomorrow. That legislation would allow anyone 21 and older to place bets on all professional and college sports unless the college event happens in New Jersey or involves New Jersey schools. And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
On today's very special radio show, I'll be talking with best-selling author Mike Michalowicz about his book Profit First and how it can transform your business or personal finances. If you struggle to meet payroll, pay rent, taxes, and more, and there never seems to be any money left over for you at the end of the month, then you need to listen to this program. It's Thursday, June 7, 2018, and I'll have all that more right now on Taking Care of Business.
Every day, taking care of business. Every way, I've been taking care of business.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Taking Care of Business. So glad you could join me on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. It's 75 degrees here in central New Jersey, and glad that you could join us for this special program today. We have with us author Mike Michalowicz, who I came across as the result of a Christmas present gift that my son gave me, probably the best gift I've ever gotten, and we'll understand why in just a little bit. But Mike is the entrepreneur behind three multi-million dollar companies and is the author of the book Profit First, The Pumpkin Plan, and what Business Week deemed the entrepreneur's cult classic, The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. Mike is a former small business columnist for the Wall Street Journal and the former business makeover specialist on MSNBC. Today, Mike travels the world as entrepreneurial advocate, speaking to groups just like all of us business owners listening to this program. He's globally recognized as the guy who challenges outdated business beliefs and teaches us what to do about it. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the program Mike Michalowicz. Mike, welcome to Taking Care of Business.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, I'm thrilled when you said yes, believe me. just to get a little backstory, my son Brandon had purchased the book Profit First back, I guess it was like October, November of last year, and he kept saying, we have to do the Profit First program. We have to do the Profit First program. I'm like, what the heck are you talking about? And finally, at Christmas, He hands me this book called Profit First. And it sat on my desk for 2 months. And I continued to struggle with the finances in my business. And finally, I think it was mid-February, I picked up the book. I said, all right, you're coming with me. And took it to my office, read the first three chapters in about, you know, a half an hour. And I said, this stuff's good. Finished the book in a week. And this is the first book in 40 years since I was a senior in college that I've ever highlighted, underlined, dog-eared, because it all made perfect sense. So enough of me talking, because there's a whole lot I want to get into with you today. But it all started for you, Mike, about how did a piggy bank, like the one featured on the cover of your book, change your entire perspective about how to become profitable and achieve wealth?
Well, Jim, as you were sharing a little bit of your story there, I had a very similar path that my business was struggling. And I found this to be true for many businesses. But in particular, I had these very kind of spiky experiences, the peak moments, which were rare when a big client would come in or something, but a lot of valleys where there was no money. Well, one particular instance, I went into the darkest valley where I got a call from my accountant who suggested, due to my business failure, that I declare bankruptcy, personal bankruptcy. And I didn't, but I did lose my house over it. I lost my cars and lost a lot. And I came home to my family to tell them what had happened. And honestly, I had not been telling them the truth because I didn't know it was the truth. I saw my own personal finances and business finances declining, but hadn't emotionally accepted it. But I couldn't kind of push it off anymore. And as I was telling my family, we're about to lose everything. My daughter ran out of the room. I thought she was running away, which I get. When we hit those dark moments, the best solution may be simply to run away.
Mm-hmm.
But she was running to her bedroom as fast as she could, grab her little piggy bank. And she ran back to me and said, Daddy, I'll be the supporter of our family. And it was like a knife, more than into my heart, it was like a knife into my soul. I felt so ashamed of what I had done, so embarrassed. I was very proud of her, but just embarrassed. And it ultimately set the seed. It wasn't like the next morning I woke up and said, oh, I know the solution to all my problems. But it set the seed to find a solution. And for years, I tried to figure out how to bring permanent profitability to my business and to my friends' businesses. And ultimately, I discovered it became a Wall Street Journal article. That article was widely popular, and it became a book.
Yep, and you know, one of the things that when I read that story in the book about your daughter, it's family is everything, and you know, you mentioned you don't want to let them down, and it's hard. And I've talked to so many business owners across the country over the past couple of months that are all telling me the same thing. You know, I'm working my tail off, but I haven't taken a paycheck in the last three pay periods. I have, and whether their spouse knows it or not, you know, it's kind of hard to admit. It's like you said, it's a bit of a shameful thing. You know, you're trying to make payroll, you're trying to pay taxes, you're trying to pay rent, keep the wolves at bay, if you will, and yet, you know, the one person that can probably prop us up the most is our home support network, and yet we don't go there first. But you know, if I lose $2 on the sidewalk, I get upset. You lost $2 million or $1 million in 2 years. What was that experience like? When I bring this up, I want to lay the groundwork a little bit. It's not just about losing $1 million. I want people to think about the debt they're carrying in their business, the loans, the mortgages, the maxed out credit cards, anything they've borrowed from family, the credit lines, things like that. All of that, if you don't take care of it, is a loss. So what is that? How do you feel like there is a light at the end of the tunnel and it's not the light from an oncoming freight train?
Yeah. Well, the decline was full of denial. I didn't realize it. So right before the decline, I had this big success. I actually sold one of my businesses, and that's where I became a self-made millionaire. And shamefully, what I did, but I didn't realize at the time, I my ego exploded. I thought I knew everything now, and I just replicate this. And became arrogant. That's the word. I just became absolutely arrogant. And I showed my arrogance off through my possessions, but also in just my lack of listening and just ignorance. As my business, my subsequent business started this rapid decline, I was pouring more money into it, I went into a denial phase. I couldn't accept that I didn't have the answer. And that's why my wife, my children didn't know what was going on. They knew, like they could see the stress on me, but I could never vocalize it because I didn't even accept it to myself. Mm-hmm. I thought that one big moment would happen. And it got so bad that it was more than just, you know, losing all my assets. I went into debt with credit card loans, even took a friend loan that I had to pay back. And there became a moment where I hit this rock bottom. There was nothing left. And that was kind of the phase I had accepted. It was absolutely the darkest day of my life. Also, ultimately now, I am the most grateful for it. I would never say that when I was going through it. Even for years afterward, I was not grateful for it. I don't wish it upon anyone, but I'm grateful because of the awareness it brought me. And what I realized, I think this is the big takeaway, and I actually just started kind of playing with this and may write a book about this. I found that there's a saying that when you have all the money in the world, what would you do? Because the saying explores in our lives, our profession, you know, what's our heart desire? And I truly believe if we do what our heart desires, we can be very successful in business and have great impact. But I found that question supposes or preposes that you already have all the money in the world, and that the only way you can do what you want to do is by first having all the money in the world, which is a trap because we don't have it. I found there's another question to ask at that rock bottom moment, and that question is, if you have no money in this world, what would be your vocation to make money of choice? What would you want to do to make a living? And what I find, when the answer is the same for having all the money in the world and having no money, and for me it was to be an author, when those questions aligned, I found the course that is best for me. So also what came out of this, after losing all my money, is I said, I have nothing to lose now. I am going to become an author. And I devoted my career, and I believe the rest of my life is going to be devoted to being a business author.
And I'll tell you what, we've talked about some of the books. We're talking about Profit First, but the next game changer for my business is The Pumpkin Plan. That's the one that Brandon is reading right now. And he's already started an institute on his side of the business. We're going to do it on my side of the business as well. But so I think you have a long and fruitful future. I don't think your daughter's ever going to have to get her piggy bank out again.
I hope not.
We got about 2 minutes before the break. And then after the break, I want to come back and kind of really dive into what the Profit First method is.
Yeah.
So the great question that I want to ask you would be, why do you think that most entrepreneurs struggle to ever make a profit?
Yeah, well, I know exactly why. It's a thing called Parkinson's Law, and I'll give you the brief summary of it. He was a theorist in the 1950s, and he realized that as the supply of something expands, our demand for it expands. For example, the more time I'm given to complete a project, the longer it'll take. The more food that's put in front of me to eat, I will eat more than if there was less. He also points out that the more money that's put in front of us, the more we consume. So what happens, and I bet you people listening in right now can relate to this, Jim, as our income in our business increases, our expenses almost uncannily increase at the same time. And that's because of Parkinson's Law. It is human nature that as a resource expands, more money, we utilize more of it. So we need a system, and that's what Profit First is, that captures our natural human behavior but gives us the outcome we want. We do that by taking our profits.
Excellent. We're talking with Mike Michalowicz, the author of Profit First, available on Amazon.com and at your local bookstore. I've already been encouraging you, our listeners, to buy this book for the last 3 months. So the spike in Mike's income over the last 3 months is directly relatable to me. But, you know, again, as we get further into the program, and it does require a little more research than a one-hour radio show will give you, this can transform both your business finances as well as your personal finances. We're going to step away for a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue with Mike Michalowicz listening or talking to him right here on Taking Care of Business on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. We'll be right back.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And I've been taking care of business every day, taking care of business. Every way I've been taking care of business. It's all mine, taking care of business and working overtime without.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com, WHCRDB. We're talking with author Mike McAllowitz, who's the author of Profit First, The Pumpkin Plan, and the ever-favorite Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. Welcome back, Mike, and wanted to do a deeper dive now into what Profit First is. I've tried to explain it to friends. I'm running across several skeptics, but if you can, how should people think about and approach Profit First as it relates to their business?
Well, I'll start off with the foundational component. And what we have been told historically is that profit comes last. We're told that, you know, it's sales minus expenses in our business that result in profit. And it makes logical sense. It's a mathematical equation. But the problem is, behaviorally, it hurts us tremendously. Because what we're told is that profit is literally the last consideration. And then when something comes last, it means it can wait. For example, if I was ill and the doctor says I need to start exercising and start, you know, change my diet immediately, I don't come out of the doctor's office and start saying, today I will take my health last. I say, today I will take my health first. My health is the first priority. So it's human nature. What comes first gets done. What comes last gets delayed. And in the traditional formula, sales and expenses comes first. So most businesses are focused on, I got to sell as much as I can, and then, you know, spend as much as I can. And they don't say the word spend. They say, I need to grow as much as I can is the word they use.
Mm-hmm.
And profit gets delayed and delayed, not just for months, but years, and sometimes for the life of a business. They just squeak by. In Profit First, we simply flip the formula. It's sales minus profit equals expenses. And what we're doing here, logically, it's actually identical. It's a variable swap. Mathematically, there's no impact, but there's a tremendous behavioral impact. So what I'm saying now, in action, every time there is revenue that flows into the business, we will immediately take a predetermined percentage and allocate it toward profit. The remainder is expenses, and this is what the business must survive off of. Effectively, we are reverse engineering profitability. If I declare my business, I'm committed to a 10% profit or 20 or whatever the number is, the business now is, you know, automatically telling you what's truly available to achieve that in expenses. Now our focus is on selling and selling profitably.
Right. And then what do you do? The one question I'm getting from a lot of people, and this seems to be over the last 2 or 3 years, it's getting worse, if anything. You sell a product, you have, whether it's by contract or handshake, and the terms are net 30. And suddenly your customers are taking net 30 and extending that to net 60, net 90, and beyond. I talked to one gentleman yesterday. He's got over $100,000 in receivable. They're over a year old. It's almost to the point where you're not going to get that money. So how do you reel that in? And then I want to get back into, you know, more of on profit first, because you just said the magic word, the behavior shift of profit first and how it will help you in your business.
Yeah, so the question back is we have to look at that agreement. It's, you know, net terms are an agreement. That agreement with our customer. The question is, do we allow our customers to breach their agreement? Is that acceptable? And if we say yes, I will allow my customers to negate an agreement we have, well then we have to live by that and say, okay, net 100 is okay, pay whenever you want, because that's the true agreement, is pay whenever you want.
Mm-hmm.
If the terms are net 30 and the customer agrees to it, say this is an agreement between us. I'm extending you terms so that you can benefit from a deliverable I'm giving you without having to pay for it. That's extraordinary risk on my behalf. You have committed in return that you'll pay me 30. If not, the question is, do I want to sustain this client relationship? I will tell you this. If you alleviate yourself of that relationship, you effectively fire that client. I know that's a painful decision, but that client, if they don't pay you on their terms, when they go to your competitor, it's not like all of a sudden they're magically going to pay early or net 30. The competitor will suffer from this. There's some people, not many, but there's some companies that just take advantage of those situations. The question is, are you willing to tolerate it? So it's a decision. And I realize it's a hard decision, but the only money that matters is money in the bank.
Right.
Phantom money, money that could be coming in, I have accounts receivable of X, Y, Z. It's not collected. It may never come in. And that's a dream. It's not a reality.
Right.
So that's how I address that.
Okay, good. And, you know, Brandon made a comment to me. He was listening to your podcast recently, and he said, Mike says something great that will kind of put you in the right mind shift. Your quote was, it doesn't matter what you make, it matters what you take. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So we've all been judged, and the kind of the whole entrepreneurial mindset is around size, revenue, employees. I just had an entrepreneurial event yesterday, speaking there, and I was at the networking prior, and sure enough, people were like, yeah, tell me about your business. How big are you? What are your sales like? And we brag about that. But what I consider revenue is a stress on the business. The more revenue I generate, the more stress I'm putting on my business. Now, stress is not a negative thing. It's just responsibility. So I do want to grow the amount of revenue, but if I only grow revenue, I'm only growing stress. The antidote to that is profitability. It's the health of the business. It's the balance. That's what you take from the business. So with growing revenue, I also want growing profitability, which will balance out that stress level. So while we've been kind of trained to focus on the revenue side, revenue is a vanity number. Profit mm-hmm. is where the sanity exists. That's what matters. So I tell business owners, I don't really even care how big you are. I care how healthy your business is. And I don't think the question anymore should be to another entrepreneur, tell me about the size of your business or the number of clients you have or the number of employees you have. I think the real question we need to ask each other is, how healthy is your business?
Right.
Because that's what matters.
And, you know, to that end, you mentioned earlier the behavioral shift. And I think I just experienced that in the last week or two by implementing Profit First. And we started on March 15th. We'll get into all of the different accounts and everything in a minute, but seeing money in those accounts versus that one bucket where all the money went in and then all the money went out. And we talked about the formula that you mentioned with Parkinson's law, how, everything was, you know, back asswards, if you will, of, that we took the profit last. Seeing that there is money that's going to cover Brandon's and my paycheck over the next three pay periods, seeing that there's money in that profit account, seeing that taxes are covered, seeing that the rent is covered, what a liberating feeling. And the best part about it is, instead of having that big dark cloud over my head that was literally paralyzing me, you know, by how am I paying rent, how am I paying the employees, things like that, I'm free now to be creative, to think about my marketing, to go do sales the proper way, to do presentations. Yeah. And first of all, I obviously want to thank you for that, because couldn't do it on my own, but by implementing the program, it definitely has enlightened me, and it's fun. I mean, this is literally like a game now, where I can't wait to get in the morning, open up my bank account, and say, yes, there's money. Let's make a distribution. So let's talk about the profit first and the different bank accounts that you want people to talk to start with. Talk about your targeted allocation percentages, your current allocation percentages, and walk people through the mechanics of it.
Sure, I'll lay out the system. I do first want to acknowledge you. I literally have goosebumps, Jim, as you were sharing that. I'm so excited for you. And I think that is the whole reason you and we all started our businesses, is so that going to work is fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the words you said that really gave me the goosebumps is you said that now I can focus on what I need and want to do, the innovation side, the serving clients. That's the irony. Our clients actually want to be highly profitable. They may not use those words, but they want us concentrating and focusing on them. If we're not profitable, we are so stressed and focused on the money that we can't serve them to the highest level. So they want us to be profitable. The formula to get there, this is what we need to do. You called it the buckets, and that's what it is. We have to realize that the normal behavior of most entrepreneurs is to do what's called bank balance accounting. I do this all the time, I log into my bank account. I actually did it twice today already to see what my balances are. But the problem is, if we didn't have one bank account, all we see is what I call the serving tray of cash, kind of like a Thanksgiving dinner when that turkey comes out. You see how much turkey is available. But at Thanksgiving dinner, we never tell our guests at the table, hey, everyone, just grab your knife and fork. Everyone for themselves, fight over the turkey. Of course not. We carve the turkey up so that everyone at the guest table gets a portion of food to eat. Well, the same is with our business. If we have a singular account, our business is just looking and saying, okay, the next thing that's hungry is going to eat it, which is always bills. But when we actually apportion money in advance by setting up multiple buckets, now we know what money is allocated to prior to spending it. And here's the buckets I recommend. The first one is the serving tray. You need an account, I call it income, where money comes in. It's a depository-only account. Your income comes there. It just sits there. It's your serving tray. It is that turkey, but you never eat the turkey off the serving tray. We then allocate to the remaining at least four accounts. I call this collectively the foundational five accounts, but some businesses may ultimately roll out more accounts as they get more sophisticated. The next account, first is income. Next account is profit. This is money we're going to allocate to reward the shareholders. You, Jim, and your son, you took extraordinary risk. You started the business. 97% of our world's population will never do what you did. And being an entrepreneur is an extraordinary thing because you took on extraordinary risk. Being a shareholder of the business, this is a reward for doing that. You've invested in the riskiest stock in the world. Literally, small businesses are micro cap X businesses. Like, this is not New York Stock Exchange. It's super low, but they're potentially high return. You, as the person that took that risk, get that return. And that's what profit is, for having courage. Mm-hmm. The next account is called owner's compensation. This is the paycheck. You have 3 weeks or three paychecks reserved. That's extraordinary, and that's the intent of this account. The world's greatest employee in every business I've ever interviewed has always been the owner. They work harder, longer. They know the business more intimately. They're more committed to the business. They're more devoted, and they'll sometimes do the work, actually many times, for no pay. But if we don't pay the owner, operator, the person working inside the business, it's only a matter of time before they get resentment for the business because it's not paying them.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to reserve your paycheck. Profit and paychecks are different. Profit is for owning equity, being a shareholder. The owner's pay is for being a employee within the business, the number one employee. Next account is called tax. This is a bucket that will reserve money to pay the owner's tax liabilities. You know, April 15th rolls around, quarterlies are due. June 15th, we're 8 days away from the next quarterlies that are due. And so many business owners panic and think, where am I going to find this money? And pull it out of their own pocket, often resorting to risky, illogical moves, like just incurring more expenses, you know, spending $10 to save $3. So what we're going to do is the business is going to afford us financial freedom by reserving the tax liabilities we have in advance and then paying them either directly to the government, which you can do with an LLC or an LLP or a hybrid, or by reimbursing the owner for the taxes that were taken out of their paycheck, like in the case of an S-Corp or C-Corp.
Mm-hmm.
Then the last and final count is operating expenses. And operating expenses is what the business's lifestyle needs to live off of. And you'll see this sequence is very important. What we do is income comes in, we allocate money to our profit. That's a reward for the owners. Owner's compensation is another form of reward. It's salary. Tax, which is a protection mechanism. It protects you because your business is liable and you are liable to pay taxes. Now protected. And the last one is serve. So it's reward, protect, serve. That last account, OpEx, is used to serve the business. And here's the golden lesson. The money that's left over here, and we allocate it based upon predetermined percentages, if there's not enough money to pay your bills, your business is telling you there's something fundamentally wrong with your business. Either we're incurring too many expenses, which is often the case, and we're often not having high enough profit margins. We need to improve the business structure. We're reverse engineering profit.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you brought up an interesting point, and, you know, I deal with a lot of our franchise owners that will call me, and they're getting to that point of resentment. And that's probably the worst poison pill you can have in business, because it shows throughout the whole organization. When the owner's not happy, the employees aren't happy, they're not doing their job to the best of their ability. Conversely, the customers aren't happy because they're not getting that friendly service, they're not getting the quality product.
Yeah, it's the old dream to nightmare scenario.
Mm-hmm.
We all have a dream, and we have a vision for what our business can do for others and what we can do for ourselves, the joy we'll get. The irony, too, is the outside perception. The day you start your business, all your friends think you're a millionaire. They think you don't even work. Like, oh, you sit home, margaritas, you're rolling in money. But the reality is it's excruciating hard work. We work ridiculous hours. But we also know in the beginning we need to put this effort in to make this baby launch. But there's a certain point of going through this dip, Seth Godin calls it the dip, that after the excitement of starting something wanes off and now we're in the throes of it, that that we may actually want to give up, that we start to resent our business. It's just too excruciating. We're working too hard, yet the world thinks we're wildly successful.
Right.
So we have to see our way through this dip. Yep. And I believe by rewarding ourselves, paying ourselves, taking a profit, we start to build confidence and the fun starts to come back.
Yep, and I'm living proof, you know, and it's and I've said this before, leading up to this show, and this is the longest promoted show in the history of radio, because we've been talking about it for 3 months, but that transformation, the behavioral transformation, the feeling excited. My wife saw it. Now, last week I worked 98 hours, but this is our busy season. I didn't mind because I knew that we were servicing customers, we were going to make money and things like that. So when you talk about the foundational five, income, or rather the profit, the taxes, the owner's comp, and OPEX, as well as income, what I want people to understand is, like, and I think in your book you mentioned grandma's envelope system. So explain to them, if you can just walk through some simple math, you get a deposit of $1,000. Talk about the current allocation percentage, the target allocation percentage, and what I want people to understand is that as you make every deposit, these envelopes or these buckets are going to fill accordingly.
Yeah. So the envelope system is a method that's been around for eons. It's documented in some very famous books, like Think and Grow Rich talks about the envelope system. The Richest Man in Babylon, another popular book, talks about this system. And basically what it says is as money comes in pre-allocated to its intended purpose, in the old days it was actually physical envelopes. If I had $100 of cash, I'd put a percentage in my food envelope, a percentage in my mortgage envelope, a percentage in emergencies, maybe a percentage to give back to the community. But I'd divide money up, and then when I went food shopping, I would just grab the food envelope and shop with what was in there. It guided me on what I could spend, therefore protecting everything else.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same version of it. I'm just the guy saying this applies to business, and we can do it at our bank. Now, the percentages, our company here conducted research of what we call the fiscally elite businesses. It was industry agnostic. We looked at everything from literally pizza shops to accounting firms to professional services, law firms to manufacturers, dog sitting, you name it. We looked at the industry. But we looked at the fiscally elite, and we determined what these companies were allocating based upon certain revenue ranges. A company that's doing $1 million, for example, a fiscally elite company, was allocating about 10% of its funds toward profit. 10% was going to pay the owners. So a $1 million company, that means they had a $100,000 bonus at the end of the year in profit. They also took home $100,000 in compensation. Taxes were being allocated to the tune of 15%, which meant if you're taking home $200,000, you're going to have a serious tax bill. And they were reserving $150,000 to take care of all of their tax liabilities. And then the remainder, which would be $650,000, was left to run the business. Now, the one challenge I have is when I share numbers like that, people listening in right now, Jim, may be saying, this guy sounds crazy. He has no idea what industry I'm in. A company like mine will never achieve those percentages. Just look at my industry.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm simply saying is those are caps or target allocation percentages for the fiscally elite. Every industry does have fiscally elite. It's a few businesses. And why shouldn't it be yours? But we have to start off with what we call our caps, and that's our current allocation percentages. Where do you stand today? And what we do is we simply look at your history. Have you ever taken a profit distribution out? Most businesses say no. I mean, they're taking out distributions, but it really is to pay their compensation or to some degree of it. But they haven't taken a bonus out, so their current cap for profit is zero. Maybe their owner's compensation is equivalent to 2 or 3% of income. Maybe the business has never paid their taxes, so that's zero. And maybe the operating expenses are 97 or 98% of the income is going just to fuel the business or run the business, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Then what we do is we look at their caps, their current allocation percentage, let's say it was zero for profit, and the target allocation percentage, which is 10%, and we cut it into slivers. We often cut it into 8 to 10 pieces. So let's say we'll cut it into 10 pieces. If we cut 10 pieces, that's 1%. And every quarter, we adjust by that 1%. And over 10 quarters, which is 2.5 years, that business will slowly build its profit muscle, going from a 1% allocation, next quarter to 2 and 3 and inevitably 10%. And they'll build their profit muscle, and 2.5 years from now, they'll be achieving those numbers.
Right.
So the goal is start where you are and go slowly.
And that's where we're at now. We started in March, and we left everything at like in the profit side at 1%. So at the end of June,
excellent,
we're jumping up to the 2%. And there may be a pain point at some point, like, ooh, I wish I didn't put that much in there. You know, you can't really say that about profit because you want to put as much as you can in. But I gave the example to somebody at its full value, profit first. If you did $700,000 in sales, technically at 10%, you would have $70,000 in profit. And in your book, you made a great analogy about meeting with your accountant, and he told you you were profitable, and yet there was no money to show for it. Could you walk us through that a little bit?
Yeah, that was another kind of knife to the heart. This is in my one business. I was dying to be profitable. I'd been pushed for years to finally make a profit. And this one fateful meeting, I met with him, and he circled on a piece of paper. I'll never forget. It said $15,000, and he circled it with a big black marker, and he said, I want to congratulate you. You did a profit this year. And I felt so good. I held the butterflies, and I said, great. Finally, I've been dying to have a profit. I'd like to take that money out. Where is it? And he starts laughing. I call it the accountant laugh, where he kind of breaks into a snort. He goes, that profit, he goes, that's an accounting profit, Mike. You don't have that. You already spent it. It's simply a paper profit. So that's what fueled me to say I never want a paper profit. I mean, Enron was profitable until the day they folded.
Right.
I don't want that. I want a cash profit, cash in our pocket. So what we're talking about is a cash-based system, and that money you're allocating, Jim, that is literal cash. It's real money that you, your son, the business owners can take out and reward yourself with.
Right. And you had said, I think somewhere in the book, that you know whatever that money is, the reward can come. But if you still have debt, maybe instead of the nice vacation, you go for the nice dinner and you pay down some of that debt. And the ultimate goal of profit first seems to be no debt.
Yeah, I'm an advocate for being debt-free. I get a lot of resistance on this. People say it takes money to make money. I don't believe that. Whoever said that, that's a nice saying, but I don't believe it's true. Why does it require money to make money? But I believe business should be debt-free because when you're in debt, you're in a weakened position. You have a responsibility to a third party. If you don't service that debt, they could literally come in and in extreme circumstances, even take over your business. Mm-hmm. I want you to be your own bank. So here's what we do. When we have profit during this system, if we have debt, realize this is an expense you incurred in the past that you couldn't afford or decided not to afford, that someone else paid for you, the credit card company or something. Someone else paid it. We need to pay that back. The only way to pay that back is by being profitable today. So we're going to take that profit out and use the majority of it to eradicate debt. And maybe we have to go through many iterations over time. But when we're debt-free, that next profit distribution comes out is fully for you. Now, I'm also believe that we shouldn't just crush the debt. I think we also need to reward ourselves. If all the money that I'm making is going towards servicing debt, it still feels like I'm not making progress.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we still go out to dinner or do whatever we define as a celebration. And I'll tell you, the very first profit distribution I had, I took out, I think it was like $18. The rest was going toward debt, and there was $18 left. I went out, I had a lunch, and I felt so good because my business, for the first time ever, was rewarding me with a nice lunch. And
mm-hmm.
I was like, wow. And the next time, it wasn't $18, it was bigger. And this last iteration, I took my family to Ireland for 2 weeks. We rented the castle, the whole thing, and the business paid for it. It feels so good, regardless of the size.
That's
you
awesome.
Got to keep doing it.
And one of the things that in the folks that I'm talking to is they'll list for me the 10 credit cards, the loans and everything like that, and all the little bills that go with running a business, whether you buy one piece from a vendor or 100 pieces from a vendor. You mentioned also the practice of what they call snowball accounting or snowball bill pay. Can you go through that with people? Because that was another behavior shift for me. Sometimes you look at the biggest bill and you say, I got to pay this down. But
yeah.
You have I literally have a folder or had a folder that was 2 inches thick of bills. And by going through snowball accounting, I got that thing down to a half an inch. And, you know, it feels good not to pull out that beefy, you know, green Pentaflex folder. And now
right.
It's just the same bills every month. It's rent, it's electric, it's gas. It's not a bunch of, you know, I'm writing checks for $15. That makes no sense.
Yeah, I love it. So this is a term that was coined by a very popular author named Dave Ramsey. He's a personal finance guru, expert. I've had the privilege now to meet with him personally. And he came up with the debt snowball. And what he said is the logical approach to debt is pay off the highest interest rate debts first because they cost you the most. But the thing is, most businesses, as you're experiencing, Jim, stay in debt. We maintain all these different debts, but we never get out of it. He said instead to use a behavioral approach, first the behavioral system. And what it is sort your debt from the smallest amount due to the largest amount due. Then make every effort, you have to maintain all of your debts by paying the interest, but make every effort to eradicate that smallest debt, because that's where we're going to have our quickest, earliest win. When that happens, you pay up the debt, tear up that statement, that feels so good.
Oh, yeah.
Then the interest rate you were paying for that smallest debt gets added to the interest rate you're paying for the next smallest debt. So now you actually have two payments effectively going toward that next smallest debt. You start getting a little bit of momentum. When profit comes out, also put that toward that smallest debt, that next smallest debt. And then you tear that one up when it's done, and that feels great. But now you have three payments going. The first two, since those debts are eradicated, those interest rate payments can go toward the next debt. You actually start building this momentum and muscle and get eradicate the next debt. You see this snowball build. Again, this is a behavioral-based system. It doesn't make logical sense, but humans are not logically based. We're behavioral animals, if you will. And these systems capture the best of our behaviors and channels it to an outcome we want, like eradicating debt.
Very good. We're speaking with Mike Michalowicz, the author of Profit First, The Pumpkin Plan, The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. You got a new book coming out called Clockwork, Design Your Business to Run Itself, which I want to talk to you about after the break as well. Again, using the Profit First system has totally transformed my business, but I want to also talk to you after the break of when is the right time for a business to start Profit First, and we'll do that right after these messages. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100inChamberRadio.com.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hunt and Hunterdon every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hunt and Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB. So glad you could join us. And joining us on the phone is Mike McCallowitz, the author of Profit First, as well as his other books, The Pumpkin Plan and The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. If you haven't already done it, make sure you're buying the book Profit First if you run a business. And Mike, I think it's safe to say that you could also employ the techniques of Profit First into your household expenses as well.
Yeah, no question about it. I've been doing that ever since I started it for my business over 8 years ago. And actually, in the book, I wrote a chapter I call The Profit First Lifestyle. Same concept. Our income now is our salary. If you're not a business owner, you can still do this. But you basically have an income account at your house. But now the allocations are slightly different. So our bucket, we have a vacation bucket. We have one for an automobile. We have one for just the daily expenses of the house. My wife and I even have our own debit card just for our own fun money. So when I go out, I have my debit card, and I know exactly how much is available, and she does too.
Mm-hmm. Now, it took me 9 years to see the light of Profit First. But when is a good time, or is it ever too late for a business to start Profit First, and do they have to be a certain size? Does the same methodology work at 100,000 in sales, a million in sales, 10 million?
So we have now over 75,000 companies we're aware of doing it. Here's what I found. It is never too early. It is never too late. There's an advantage to doing it earlier, obviously, because of the momentum you get. A couple things I found along the way. The way you're doing it is the right way. Start slow. So if you're a brand new business, you don't even have revenue yet, you can still do this. But if you're an established business, start slow. Because if you implement Profit First at its full TAPS setting, the target allocation percentage, it can be such an abrupt change to an established business that it could crush it. And then we don't believe the system works mm-hmm. because it is too brutal. So step into it slowly and prove to yourself it works. Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe for some business it doesn't. But prove to yourself by going through it. What I found, though, interestingly, with the brand new startups that have been successful with it have actually gotten in at the full tax setting.
Wow.
An established business starts allocating 1 or 2% of its profit, but a startup allocates the full 10%, or if it's a different type of business, even more. And what I found is they don't know better. They just allocate that money and say, okay, this is what I've left to run my business, and they find a way. That goes back to Parkinson's Law that we talked about a few segments back, is that Parkinson's Law teaches that our demand for something expands as it becomes more available, but also as something contracts in its availability, our demand for it not only decreases, but we also become more innovative in its use. When I was presenting to at the chamber, I talked about a tube of toothpaste. And if I have a brand new tube of toothpaste, I will use far more toothpaste every time I brush my teeth than if it's empty. I will use less, and I'll still brush my teeth. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is, an empty tube of toothpaste, I will also find ways to extract toothpaste for weeks, twisting it and turning it and cutting off the back side. A startup doesn't, quote-unquote, know better. So when they restrict the flow of money into their expenses, they find a way to twist and turn and cut off the back side, if you will, to extract value out of the money that they do have and grow a very profitable business from the get-go.
Good. I want to talk to you on two different points because we're coming up on the end of the show. But the first is I have a listener who's I've been working with for years, and he kind of will, if I make a suggestion, he'll implement it. And so I suggested Profit First. He read the book. He's on board. Similar situation to mine, works in the business with mom and dad, and mom and dad are skeptics. How do we get them over the hump and say, at least try it? You can always go back to your old way of losing money, but at least try it and then see if after one, two, or three quarters you don't see the benefits.
Yeah, I think the big thing is they got to prove to themselves what they're doing isn't working. You know, a skeptic, it's funny, when I first became an author, I would go to people and they say, you'll never make money being an author. That's the worst career choice. And at first I said, oh, maybe it is a bad choice. But then I started saying, well, tell me what your experience has been like being an author. And they say, well, I've never done it. I say, oh, okay, so you're talking from no experience. So when someone says, you know, Profit First won't work, I say, well, what have you done with Profit First? What have you done with this system that you know it doesn't work? And they say, well, I haven't done the system. I've done something else. Oh, tell me what you have done and how has that worked for our profitability, right? So you just, the goal is just to get them into the facts. Now, if you embarrass someone, of course they're going to be resistant. So the goal is not to embarrass them. It's just to point to facts and say, listen, you haven't done this and you say it won't work, but you don't have practical experience. Are you willing just to try? And the key is this, try on a very small level. You know, the way to eat an elephant is small bites, right? The way to achieve profitability is not going in full throttle. Instead, it's saying, listen, why don't we just allocate 1% of our income? Let's run the business exactly how it was before. Nothing changes. I'm just saying let's take 1%, hide it away, and see if we do a little bit better as a result. And then come back to it 3 months later and say, look, we have some cash that's piled up. Are we willing to try 2%? And maybe that belief system will start to change if you take very small bites.
Very good. Now, I've come across a major roadblock, and that is my own personal accountant. I offered to buy them the book and said, I need you to read this book, and then this is how we're going to run it. And all they looked at was, well, this is creating more work for us. We now have to reconcile six different accounts instead of the way it always was, those generally accepted accounting principles. But you have a unique thing in the Profit First professionals. So if your accountant is resistant and won't change, and really then you'd have almost two systems working against each other, can you talk about the Profit First professionals?
Yeah, yeah. You know, if your accountant or bookkeeper won't support it, this the question I have for you is, these are your vendors. Their job is to support you. And if they're unwilling to do it, I would just question where's their interest? Is their interest in doing something that they've done, or is their interest in supporting you? And I'm not trying to be difficult here. I'm just saying, you know, let's look at it from that vantage point. We, as a result, started an organization called Profit First Professionals. We have over 270 CPAs and bookkeepers and coaches now who are specifically trained and certified for Profit First. What that means is they were and are required to run Profit First for themselves. Kind of like, you know, if I'm out promoting Profit First and telling people to do it, and I don't do this for myself, I mean, I'm the greatest charlatan of all time. Like, I live by this system. And every accountant and bookkeeper and coach that we work with, it's mandatory that they live by this system. I want them knowing not just from a logical standpoint, but from an experiential standpoint. And we have members all over the globe and members who are specialized in different industries and niches. So if you want to look at a certified Profit First professional, who can also, by the way, take care of your accounting needs while driving your profit. You can go to our website. You can just Google Profit First Professionals, ProfitFirstProfessionals.com. Click on Find One, and we can make an introduction for you.
Very good. And I'll also have I'll be posting on our Facebook page a link to Mike's website as well tomorrow with the audio link to today's show. It's funny because when it came time to choose a bank, and you talk about choose a bank that doesn't charge fees, won't charge a fee per transaction or anything like that, you want your money working for you. When we mentioned that we were doing Profit First, and I interviewed three different banks and a credit union, the one banker that impressed me the most was from PNC Bank, and she said, I'm going to buy. She bought the book that night. It came in. She read it. She came back in my office a week later. She goes, I love this. I'm recommending it to all of my my clients. And she was the one who actually found you, that you were speaking at the Somerset County Library, and that's why we went. But so she'll come in and periodically and say, how's Profit First working? How's Profit First working?
Oh, I love.
And I think that's a good connection to have as well. We're coming up on the end of the show. You have a new book coming out called Clockwork. Brandon and I have already pre-ordered our copies. It's called Clockwork, Design Your Business to Run Itself. Can you give us a preview of what we can expect?
Yeah, so I think there's kind of a Maslow's hierarchy of needs, not just in our personal lives, but in our entrepreneurial lives. The foundation in our personal lives is if we don't have air, oxygen, we'll do anything to gasp for air. But once we have that, then we need food and water, then shelter, and you build up to self-actualization. I believe in our personal and our business lives, the air equivalent is profit. If there's not money flowing into the business enough to sustain the business, we become desperate. That's what Profit First was designed to do. Once we have that assurity and confidence of profit, the next thing now is the freedom of time. You know, let's not work 90 hours a week if we don't have to. Let's do the work that we want to do within our business, not that the work that needs to be done. How do you scale a business to give you the freedom to do what you want in your business and in your life?
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News.
The race is on to rescue 12 boys and their soccer coach from a cave in Thailand. It's expected to rain this weekend, so divers are racing against the clock to do what they can to rescue the boys and their coach. Nick Zawig is a former Navy SEAL. He talks about what this rescue will look like.
I don't think this is in the playbook. I mean, it's a mile and a half in. They're going to put them on ropes, probably give them some sedatives. They're going to use a Kirby Morgan full face hood. And, I mean, they're going to wish, you know, hope for the best. I read something earlier. They're talking about 100% probability of no problems. If they're going to do that, they're going to have to wait 4 months until the rain recedes and they can walk out.
A teenager in San Antonio, Texas, was attacked in a restaurant this week for wearing a Make America Great Again hat. The 16-year-old supporter of President Trump was eating with friends at a Whataburger in San Antonio when a patron came up and threw a drink in his face. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn-Root. Tangible Investments is the main title sponsor of my show. Many of my fans and listeners tell me they buy gold and collectible coins from a local dealer in their city because they don't know where else to go, or from telemarketers they see on TV because these companies spend millions to advertise. Sadly, the majority of companies that consumers reach out to rely on commissioned salespersons who have limited experience, limited expertise, and no credentials whatsoever. Tangible Investments has been around for 35 years. They build long-term relationships, not one-time sales. They work on the lowest spreads anywhere in the industry, so you always get the best price. Most importantly, the listeners of War Now are guaranteed to deal directly with Mike Bonham, VP of Tangible, and a staff of senior executives with a combined 200 years of experience in precious metals. Get the best prices, the lowest spread, deal with the most credible, experienced experts in the industry, and right now start your Tangible relationship off right with a free American Silver Eagle. to receive your free American Silver Eagle. Call 800-780-9000. That's 800-780-9000. Or visit TII1.com.
At a 4th of July event yesterday in Fremont, Ohio, Congressman Jim Jordan spoke out against a report that he turned a blind eye to alleged sexual abuse at Ohio State University when he was an assistant wrestling coach.
There is no truth to the fact that I knew of any abuse. I've talked to other coaches. They didn't know of any abuse. That's just not accurate to say those things, that we knew of it and didn't report it. It's just not true.
That audio courtesy of CNN. You might want to check your Facebook blocked list. USA Radio Network's Wendy King tells us why.
Facebook says a bug that operated between May 29th and June 5th may have unblocked your blocked list.